Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. With me today, my co-host, Letitia Burbaum. Welcome, Letitia.
Thank you, Bart.
Paul, as usual, producer. Paul.
Looking forward. I can taste the turkey already here.
Well, in the spirit, and we have another guest I'll introduce in just a moment, but in the spirit of holidays and then gifting, today, Paul, our topic is going to be about gifting, year-end tax planning, and how we can make a difference in people's lives with our gifting.
I'm all ears.
All right. And with that, I am going to let Letitia introduce our special guest that's coming in via satellite.
Oh, yes, right, from remote parts of the world. Well, he's off doing good deeds around the world here. He's giving to other people.
That's right.
Absolutely. So I want to introduce Randy Houston. He's going to be on our show today. He's with Yellowstone Trust Administration, and he is a third-party administrator for CRTs and CLTs, and we'll go into depth of what that is. But wanted to say hello, Randy.
Hello.
Thanks for being on our show today.
Oh, it's fun. It's great.
All right. So in the spirit, like I said, of gifting and of the holiday season, what we do as financial advisors is we work with our clients, and we really want to understand what their legacy plans are. So there's certainly, during their lifetime, there's things that they want to do, which one usually pay as little taxes as possible. That's usually a very primary goal, to preserve their assets, to grow their assets.
Who likes to pay taxes?
I said they'd like to pay as little taxes as possible.
Exactly.
You can totally mess up my train of thought, Letitia.
I don't know. I just wanted to be able to make sure the audience knows that this show is all about saving money and the bottom line and what do I like?
Saving money.
You know what? I like paying taxes. I want to just help Uncle Sam all the help. He needs the help right now.
Paul is fired.
By the way, we're going to have to keep an eye on Letitia, because remember, I got shushed on our last episode.
You did. You did me too. She's giving me the evil eye right now, because I'm trying to cover for you while you're recovering here.
All right. So the other big planning issue that we do with our clients, at least with both of our clients, the ones that we attract, it seems, is long-term legacy planning. What happens after they're gone? Mm-hmm. And the good news is we can accomplish a few things doing one thing. In other words, if we're doing philanthropic work or charity or gift planning, it can help clients save money today and at the same time help create their legacy. Randy, do you want to add a few words before we dive into some of the technicalities of the different types of plans?
Oh, absolutely. Appreciate being on the show today. What I mostly run into with clients around the country is sometimes people think that they have to be highly charitably inclined to use some of the tools that we're going to talk about today, when in fact that's not the case with most of the time. Most of the time people are saying, how can I save taxes and how can I avoid capital gains or save on my current income taxes, while at the same time benefiting the charities that I'm interested in. But we a lot of times create charitable intent because of what's in it for the client. That's where I always start, of what's in it, what are the economic benefits for the client first, and then the charitable aspect comes in later, because you have more to give away, you have more taxes that you've saved. And so that's always the starting point. For me, anyway, is what's in it for the client, and then we use some of these great tools that the government has given us in order to highly benefit themselves and their favorite charity.
Great. Thanks for that. One of the great things about our show is we don't mind a little debate. Letitia and I do that often, and I completely believe you, Randy, with your clients. But I'm going to go back to, I think our clients... maybe they're different, because they will lead with the charitable inclination, and then we can come out with these tools. They work the same way. It's not going to change it, but it's just a different, I think, slightly different mindset.
Yeah.
And that's not really an argument, but it's just a kind of a point. So what we were prepared to talk about today, Randy, and tell me if you want to add anything. But we want to talk about, we're going to use the letters, everybody, don't worry, we're going to explain exactly what they are, but DAFs, or donor advised funds, CLTs, and CRTs. You think we can cover that in a half hour, Randy, or do you want to add anything to that?
You definitely can cover it, but we're going to talk fast.
Okay. All right. So we'll start with donor advised funds. That's going to be a little less from you and probably more from us.
Yeah.
Right. So the concept of a donor advised fund is actually super simple. Basically, an investor, a person, a family would pre-fund potentially a lifetime of charitable giving. So it is a charitable fund set up very simply through advisors. In this case, we don't even need an administrator. Sorry, Randy.
Yeah, fine.
super simple, super inexpensive. You don't need an attorney. Your advisor can help you with it. And the contribution amount is a deduction the year you make the contribution. And where we find this most useful is Letitia and I, over the last couple of years, have had clients with big liquidation events. Probably the biggest in their life and the biggest that they will have going forward. And as I said, they have charitable inclination. So we've kind of calculated to say, hey, how much do you think you would give over the next, 20 or 30 years of your life? We come up with a number, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a month, a year. And then that helps create the number. In some cases, we have clients doing $1 million, $500,000, $1.5 million in this charitable fund, getting the full deduction this year. And then over their lifetimes, they will direct us to write checks to charities of their choice.
And examples of these would be like selling your business or selling one of your properties that's completely appreciated, that it's going to cause a lot of taxable occurrence for you.
Correct. Now, I'm gonna challenge that. The selling the property, I would probably use the CRT, Letitia,
right,
but we'll go back to that.
Big picture, these are some options.
So, exercising stock options, selling a company, just a year where you kind of a windfall of income that you probably are not going to have in the future.
Or maybe stock options, like you said, they're the grants that come due
exactly.
All of a sudden in 1 year.
So higher income.
You're like, what do I do? I don't want to pay the taxes all in 1 year. So this is a way that you can break
exactly.
it down.
And then from a logistical standpoint, it's an account that the investors will be trustees on and will continue to manage with their advisor and direct and oversee, knowing very well that at the end of their lives, and it's usually the household's lives, so husband and wife, the remaining amount will end up going to a listed beneficiary. So it does not go to the children. Does not go to anyone else other than the listed charity.
Or charities that you have listed
charities,
in there.
Charities, correct.
Yeah.
Hey, Randy, anything on that I didn't cover before we go into the others?
Well, I would say that's a good coverage, but I can use that as a segue to the CLT because they really are paired together many, many times.
Exactly.
Can you explain what a CLT is real quick for the audience?
Right. The CLT is the Charitable Lead Trust, and it's a kind of a trust that says, I'm going to place money into a trust, and I'm going to give an income stream to charity for a term of years, and at the end of the term, I get my money back. I get my trust back, and that's why sometimes folks will want to do the lead trust in conjunction with a donor advised fund, because the mentality sometimes of this kind of a person is, I don't mind letting charity rent my money or let my, give some income stream, but I really don't want to give them away the principal. When you give away $1 million into a donor advised fund, yes, you get the deduction up front.
But it's gone forever.
Yes, you get to give to charity, but at the same time, it is gone, so you don't get the principal back. Whereas the lead trust, the charitable lead trust, that income stream can fund your donor advised fund so that you are actually giving to charity through a donor advised fund, but at the end of the term, you get the principal back. And so there's actually two kinds of people that want to do that. Mm-hmm. One is somebody that has a spike year of income, as you've kind of mentioned already.
Yep.
They've sold their business and went. So then they would have two kinds of
reasons. They have a spike year of income. They sold that real estate and went, oh, I should have talked to Bart and Leticia ahead of time, but I didn't. And now I have a tax problem, or they sold their business, or even some you've already mentioned, which is the stock options. We've had several cases where somebody says, okay, I've got $500,000 of stock options, but that's an ordinary income asset if you were to cash it in.
Yep.
Well, you could cash it in and give it all away in a donor advised fund, but it's gone.
Right.
Or you could put it into a charitable lead trust, get a, you know, if you go out enough years, you can get a full deduction for the total amount. And then you're giving income for the term of years to charity, but you get the principal back.
I love that part.
Out, yeah, you washed out the tax by letting it be parked for charity's benefit for a term of years. And I love lead trusts. They're my favorite kind of trust. For one main reason is
you get the principal back
on a time clock. You have to get a tax deduction by the end of the year, or you're going to pay the check to IRS. And so there's so many folks that would much rather have a certain amount go to their favorite charity than to write that check to IRS. So we are doing a lot of lead trust this time of year because people are finally figuring out, okay, I have high W-2 income this year, or that's the other scenario. Somebody just makes a lot of money every year, and they're tired of paying those taxes. Or they sold something, and now they have that tax bill that they have to take care of this year. So most of the time, it's a term of years type of trust because people want to have a concept of when do I get my money back. You know, they want to get their arms around that they actually are going to get that trust back. They don't need the income now, but they do want to leave that to their children, that legacy piece that we were talking about. You know, it's legacy for charity, but it's also legacy for children. And so they don't want to release the principal, but they're very thankful to get the deduction to release the income.
Yeah, what I really, I love that plan as well. And I'm, as you were talking, I'm thinking about the plans we have together, and I can't think of a CLT we've done that does not have also a donor advice fund. So I think all of ours are, are kind of the team approach. And we should cover, there is a tax deduction difference. Can you tell us what the tax deduction difference is?
Yeah. If you're giving money away in a donor advice fund, it's, you know, you get 100% write off, and that would be up to today, up to 60% of your income if it's cash, or 30% if it's stock, something like that. With the lead trust, you can write off up to 30% of your income, but any deduction can carry forward, you know, for five more years until you use it up. So even if you're funding it with cash, it's still a 30% of adjusted gross income type of deduction. So it's almost always funded with cash. But when you think of it, what's the profile of somebody who wants to do this? They've already sold the business and have the cash.
Now they've
already sold the real estate and have the cash. They've already made $500,000 a year for umpteen years, and the cash is in the bank. So it's a perfect scenario for that type of client.
Exactly. Bart's sitting over here laughing at me because I'm getting so excited while you're talking. I'm like, yeah, this is great. This is great. This is literally some of the main reasons why I started being an advisor in the beginning, is coming up with great solutions for people. And this is always so exciting for me.
Yeah, these are one of the greatest planning tools. And yes, Leticia's a little bit nerdy.
You know what? And also, when you think about plan giving or kinds of trust, a lot of times you think, well, it's really for the person that's 65 years and older, and you know, they get these big deductions and stuff. But with the lead trust, because it's a term of years trust, you bring in a younger crowd into this donating the charity world, because I have many, many cases of people in their 40s and even some in their 30s who made
production.
A lot of money, stock options or whatever reason. And they have a long time horizon, so they can afford to tie it up for 10 or 15 years. They look at it like it's an IRA.
Yeah.
It's my money that's tied up for a while that I'm going to get back. Right. And so what's important, and just an example why this is an important tool, is all of those payments to charities, let's say it's a 10-year trust, 10 years worth of, say, 5% to charity, that's all cumulative in the first year. So IRS lets you front load all of those payments to charity, and that's why you have this huge upfront income tax deduction in the year that you have the tax problem. So I talked with somebody yesterday that, well, they have $500,000 of a bonus coming out from retiring.
Right.
Well, they're not going to have that problem next year because they're retiring. And so they have to try to get a deduction against that $500,000 this year, because next year maybe they are going to make $30,000. So IRS lets you front load that deduction the year you have the tax problem, and then it's like a pledge where the money is gradually coming out to charity over the term of years.
Hey, Randy, what's the shortest term of years you would use, and what's the longest?
Yeah, there is no rule on that. You could have a 1 year, you could have a 100 year, but it's what I call linear math. How much is going to charity? That's going to dictate the charitable deduction. So the more years you pay to charity, the more interest rate you pay to charity, the higher the deduction. So we back into how much deduction can the client use, that 30% of their income, and then help design a trust based on that. Most of the time, I'm seeing a 10-year trust because that's a reasonable amount of time to get the money back, and it's a reasonable amount of time to get enough deduction. I have them at 5 years, and I have them at 23 years. So it's very custom according to how much, not only how much deduction they want, but when they want the money back. I talked with a planner yesterday who's doing a $1 million trust, but he's only going to, for the client, but they're only going to do a 4 year because that's when they want the money back. It's just going to generate enough deduction for what they want in the current year. So it's very custom.
Well, that's why we reach out to people like you, Randy, and help us design it so we can make it specific for their needs.
Hey, Randy, we're going to switch gears just for the sake of time. I want to make sure we cover CRTs. I like that tool a lot, too, for different reasons. And now, what I have used it for before, probably most extensively, is for real estate. Letitia mentioned it. You mentioned it. But someone has a highly appreciated piece of property.
Want to define it first for our audience that doesn't know what a
The CRT is the Charitable Remainder Trust. It's been in the IRS code since 1969 in Section 664. Very commonly used. It's very mainstream, so it's not edge planning. And most charities will use this. But it basically, the number one reason people use the charitable remainder trust is to avoid the capital gains tax on the sale of an asset. And that, Bart, was what you're talking about with the kind of assets you've seen go into those trusts.
Yeah. And or if someone's going to sell their company and they have stock, they can actually, with proper planning, they can put their stock in there as well, correct?
Right, yeah. C corp stock is what works. You actually can use you can do it with an S corp, but that's typically a little harder planning. But we can work around that if we have enough time to do the planning. But it's typically C corp stock. But businesses, real estate, and appreciated stock are the three main assets because they're all capital gains assets. So somebody has a $5 million piece of property and they only paid $500,000, they have $4.5 million in gain.
Yep.
You know, in California, they're going to lose, 40 to 50% of that in taxes. Because the trust is a tax-exempt trust, it doesn't have to pay the tax. It's like a charity. So you sell it and you have that total $5 million still there to reinvest. So what does that mean? It means you have higher income because you avoid the capital gains tax. The donor has a lifetime income from that trust. And then at the end of their life, then that goes to whatever charity or charities they say. That's why it's called a charitable remainder trust, because the charity gets the remainder of what's ever there. Some folks might say well, what about the kids? Well, there's two or three options to help make the kids whole on that too, which is probably a little more detail than we want in this half hour.
Yeah. So just to clarify, the charitable lead trust, which we discussed previously, charitable remainder trust, they're really somewhat of the opposite. The charitable lead trust, the charity gets the income for a period of time. the remainder goes back to the investor, and in the charitable remainder trust, they get to sell a highly appreciated property, pay no taxes, use that full value now of the sold property, generate an income for the rest of their lives, their and their spouse's life, and then the remainder goes to a beneficiary.
There's a timeline of ownership, correct? Do you want to?
Yeah, it basically is for the rest of their life, and if they outlive their life expectancy, the payment just keeps coming to them as long as they live.
And there's still a range, correct, of payouts, and it depends on investor's age?
That is, there actually is a rule, a law on that. It has to be at least 5%, can't mm-hmm. be any less than 5% on a payout. It can be significantly higher than that, but as you just kind of referenced, there is a maximum based on their age, because there has to be a minimum remainder to the charity to be a charitable trust.
So I'm not sure how long you've been in the business, but I have a case study. This was back in the late 90s. These guys were in the mortgage business. Remember the term 125? You can refinance your house for 125% of the value. And they made tons of money, and they had stock, and they were getting ready to sell their company. And at the time, we called these, and I will take it back. This particular investor did not have any charitable intent, was very motivated by the tax savings. And we were able to create, before the laws changed, a wasting CRUT, in which case I think the payout was 9 or 10%. You know, and the market went through some good times and bad times, but he ended up getting every single penny out of that trust, along with the deduction. I think the new laws have eliminated that, right?
They changed.
Yeah, they changed the law. Too many people figured out that loophole.
they closed that loophole.
So you want to mention about the ownership, and some of these investments have to be in the trust before they're sold or the transaction takes place. Do you want to just briefly mention that?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great point. In order to avoid the capital gains tax, the asset has to be sold by the trust. So mm-hmm. if it's real estate, the trust document has to be created first. You have to deed it into the trust. And then, say, if Mr. and Mrs. Jones are their own trustee, which is most common, the donor is their own trustee, they are selling as the trustee of their trust. That's the way to avoid the capital gains tax. If they have an agreement before they put it into the trust, then IRS says you've already sold it and you won't avoid the tax. So it's critical that you put it in the trust, deed it into the trust before you sell it. The other piece with a charitable trust with real estate is you can't have debt on the real estate.
And that's why working with a good advisor that has these planning tools and working with someone like you, I think, is really, really important.
Yeah.
All right. Any closing thoughts? We're just about out of time here.
How can people find you?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. We're national, so we have an 800 number, 800-572-6394. Mm-hmm. 800-572-6394. Anybody can ask for information, or we do free illustrations. We do that. We like to do that through you, Bart, and advisors. Because you understand what we're talking about as well.
Yep.
The other thing is, I've been doing this for 30 years, and so I know the details of the pitfalls, et cetera. And this is a perfect storm time frame to be doing both of these kinds of charitable trusts.
Absolutely.
Because we still have very high tax rates, assets are higher, people are making a lot of money, and there's very few deductions that people can mm-hmm. have besides the charitable deduction. And when you get most of your value out of it and include charity, that's a huge win-win.
Yeah, and you're going to see, Bart and I wrote a paper about this, as well as some of the year-end tax planning strategies, and there's not as many as there used to be. So utilizing strategies like this can really help you. And for me, I would say help you in your bottom line and help a charity that you really believe in.
Hey, Randy, thanks so much for being in studio with us today. We really appreciate your expertise and your explanations. Appreciate that.
No problem. Glad to help.
Oh, great. And thanks so much to everyone who tuned in today. We look forward to being back in studio next week. Have a great week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc., under SEC registration.